session number 16724, Ernest Taylor, reel 7.
Mr. Taylor, reel 7.
Mm-hmm.
This was a working party you're describing, Mr. Taylor. How many men would be with you?
Well, so I was just going to say, I think to start off with that, there were 20 of us, actually 30 of us, and there was 15, about half each, half South African. South Africans there were. And what happened was, we used to, as I've said previously, we used to go to work on this train in the morning and stop at different places digging trenches, and a foreman in charge was in a couple of sentries. Well, there was such a thing, if you dodged the column, you know, if you tried to get away with the work, they called it a Churchill, and they used to give you a haircut, a short haircut. And that was to denote that you were a dodger. You used to hide anywhere to get out of the road to work. And then, if you did it again, well, you used to shave your head. So you knew different ones. Well, anyway, as time went on with this, there was starting to get some awkward ones wouldn't do the job on this thing. So they decided, what happened was, a new benzene factory or something being opened, and they wanted workers for it. So what they did with our party, they picked half of the awkwardest ones. It was about half of us were taken off that job, and I was one of them. Just the ones they thought was awkward, and there was a few South Africans, two or three South Africans. One of them was an interpreter. He was a good interpreter, and they took them. And they sent us from Bricks, because we weren't there long, but that's all we did at Bricks. Muchau, I believe they call it, I'm not sure the two. But anyway, in Germany, near Leipzig. We just did this same job all the time. And we lived above the public house, as I said. And they used to... Oh, there was one day, the steward, he came up from downstairs, and word came round, it used to be like cabbage stew, something like that, in a piece of bread. And there was actually meat in it, small portions of meat. And whether it was true or not, we got the word came round, we got to know that the dog had puppies, and they drowned them, they got rid of them, and they chopped them up while they were small and went in there. Now, whether that was but it was all eaten. We couldn't afford to say no and leave it, and we ate it. So then, after that, things started. We got to know about this new factory being built, and they halved us and sent us through to Czechoslovakia. And we were shunted here and there, just as usual, like, but what didn't take too long. We got there, and it was into a camp.
You said that you were one of the awkward ones. What had you done to be awkward?
Well, I don't know, but I know the different ones that were... I know that the reason... that they picked them is because maybe they were bad workers, maybe they didn't work as hard or something like that, but I knew for a fact that there was two of them were dodging all the time, and they were among them, so it must have been for that reason, get rid of them. I think that was the reason. We weren't too keen. We just didn't do it if we didn't want to. We didn't believe in helping them, but they could be nasty. They would be nasty about it, but just do as little as possible. I think that's why. The others, now this interpreter, he would do a lot for them, and he got kept there, that was it. And a coloured one, it was a coloured South African, a Cape coloured, he wouldn't do much, he had a grudge, and they sent him away with us. Anyway, we got there, and it was a camp, just like our army camps. But it was inside of this factory. I think they called it something like Hermann Göring Benzene Factory. It was one of these factories, like, there was a lot of ersatz stuff made out of it. Coal used to go in at one end, and you could see it going up the conveyor. And mind this, it was massive. When I say a factory, it was as big as the Sunderland. And it used to come out at the other end. Eventually, it was nothing but steaming dust. And they say they got coffee and all. Well, it was ersatz coffee and things like that. And they got a lot of everything out of that coal that they could get. But, well, that was the sort of factory. Well, we used to go for maintenance and digging and filling the... What we had to do was, if they were building, they were building bunkers in the middle of the factory, these air raid shelters, and had great big high ones with 12-foot walls, but bombs, you know, couldn't burst. And we, our jobs, for instance, a small truck with these little skips trucks, one put two shoveling sand in and one putting a bag of cement in, and then we had to, somebody had to push them right away around till they got to the top, but be mixed and dump them into the mixed cement in to build these bunkers. Well, that was the job, part of the job, to do that. And other jobs inside and different, sweeping oil up and things like that. And but the fellas in charge there, they were, you know, the factory workers and that, and they were shifted about themselves. And, well, what they used to do, if there was an air raid, as I was saying about the haircuts, there was umpteen of them had short hair to finish. One belonged, he's just died, the lad belonged, Jack Milburn belonged, he was in the artillery, but he was prisoner of war with me. He was, I never knew the colour of his hair until I got back and saw him after the war, because it was always off, and he had jet black hair, incidentally. But, anyway, if there was an air raid, like I said, we were allowed to go out or go into down into the mine, the coal mine, a drift, you know, one of those open drift. We could go into those, or go into the coal mine, but the Hitler Youth was always there to see you back. But you couldn't have got out, it was all barbed wire right round, right way around, it was about the size of a town. But as soon as the air raid went, the air raid siren went, we had to form up and go. Now, they also had civilian prisoners with them working, and they were worse threat than us. There was Poles and different ones, and, you know, prisoners with a prison uniform on. Now, they used to dig big trenches.
How did they treat them?
Well, I was just going to go to that. They treat them worse than us, a lot worse. Because they were watched all the time. The prison warders were on top of them watching them. If they wanted to go to the toilet, they used to have to go to him and take the hat off. And if they wanted to go to the toilet, he used to give them permission, but they sat and did it there where they were, in the trench where they were digging and all the mates. Mind, they were great big trench, you know, great big ones for big drains. I had to do it there and then. And put the hat on and go back and carry on working. And there were just little poles and all sorts, a mixture of them. Well, actually, at this particular time, I may as well mention it now, that I actually witnessed a murder. This particular time, the air raid sirens had gone, and we were running to get to wherever, I don't know whether it was to the pit or outside or in a bunker or something like that. But actually, I was running past, and these political prisoners, prisoners were lining up, the convicts were lining up. And one guard was at the front, and one at the back. And when he lined them, he started them double quick march, he used to run. But there's one he must have missed, and I was just coming alongside of them. And this one, he must have miscounted. And this one came behind with a great big boulder, the back one, smashed him in the head with it. He dropped, and he just ran in and carried on running with his prisoners. Now, goodness knows when the front one got to know that his mate was missing, but he would never find him. And that was where I actually saw that happen.
So this one of the prisoners hit the guard?
He had picked a boulder, a big rock up, and hit him, because he was running. He must have missed him, or he dodged the column, and he was running that way, and the guard had his back to him, just hit him. He went down, and he just carried on running with the others themselves. And I was pleased for him, the way they were treating him, you know. And another time, though, was terrible, because These areas inside, they had to have area shelters inside because the workers, all even the Germans, the civilians, they lived in this factory. They couldn't get out the road. So they had these, we used to call them potato pie. They had shelters. When the farmer used to store his potatoes, he used to cover them up with soil and straw. Well, it was shaped like that, long ones, an entrance in that way, and you're coming that way, and an entrance in that way. Just like a pointed archway inside. And actually the cement roof came like that. And you all sat opposite each other in this area. And there was this one particular raid, the worst raid we had, when I actually saw, coming back to it, I saw a haystack on the move, and it was all bodies, limbs and all sorts had been stacked. They'd been stacked up in the time we got back. And in one of these shelters, there'd been a bomb dropped outside or something, and the blast had gone in one end and out the other. And all you could see, there were women and kids belonging to the workers in the factory, all you could see right along the wall, the cement wall, was a big red mark and a big, where they'd bust their heads with the blaster, they blasted them all. You could see big and little and a couple of little and a big and where they'd all been sitting and they'd just been, you could understand that they blasted them all about like that and killed them. It must have been right in. And another one, there was in the job we got later on that day, one of the big tank, the gas tanks, and it was full of, I think it was oil or bitumen or something. It had leaked and it had filled these area shelters up, so they were no good to them at the finish. It had leaked out and filled them up, and we had the job of bailing it out with barrows and that. And you see the state we were in, things like that. We used to get all sorts of jobs like that. But I think the important one, that one, when I saw that man, I thought, crikey, you could expect it, because they used to treat them like, they were forced labour to start with, and they used to treat them like rubbish.
Were you given any chance to meet these prisoners?
No.
Give them things and things like that?
The only ones we could meet to talk to was the sentries, the postons as they call them. And they were, so as I say, there was good ones and bad ones. And I was once in solitary because trying to dodge the column, went out and it got out, not out of the camp, you couldn't get out. But there was inside, as I say, there was a lot of the workers had their homes and that. They were built inside, right inside of this big place. And I used to get to know where those different ones, maybe these forced labour were, foreigners, they had a house in the yard where they lived. You could go and get cheap stuff, anything that was going, a bit of bread or something like that. And I went after it. What you did was, I'd got a Red Cross parcel. You used to save some stuff what you knew, thought they would be after, and you could get more for it. Put a small bar of chocolate or something down your shoe, or a couple of cigarettes, and you could bargain with them. And I got caught, twice. And what they did, they put us into solitary, in the German prison, only it was inside, where the sentries all were. There's so many cells in for the likes of us. And I was put in, and what I was allowed, I was better off than I was outside, because you used to get a small ration in there from the prison, and then the out of our hut, the mates used to send me a little bit further. I got to send it over and all. So I got that. But you were in continually all day,
what were these cells like?
It was just a cell with a bunk. Just a bunk in a kind of, I don't think there was even any blankets in there or mattress. But it was just there. There was a toilet in, I think. That's right. There was a toilet in. Just in the cell. And I think I was twice in that.
Were they steel doors?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Just like a little prison door, they could see in the old-fashioned one, but they don't in. And And I was in there twice. I forget what the other one was, when I was wandering out somewhere. Could be air as well.
Was there any attempts to escape?
Yeah, there was, but not from ours. They couldn't. They were hemmed in that much with this Hitler Youth as well. There was tons of them in Rome. They used to be on the out there, wicked. But you see, that's what I mean. When you talk about prisoner of war life, you see these films and that. Like, now, I wasn't far, really, from, what do you call it?
Colditz.
Wasn't far from Colditz. And when I came home and I saw that film about Colditz, we didn't get it. There's a book there I've got now, she sent away for us, and it shows you them having concert parties and things like that. Now, the likes of them, they did have escapes because they were kept in this big place and they had better facilities than those, and they did. But we didn't get anything like that. It leads people to see, to think that you're having a ball, you know. I forgot to show you that book, but the concert parties and everything and Cape Fit classes. Well, we didn't get, we were lucky to be alive in the places where I was in, especially the public house one wasn't too bad, but this benzene factory, you couldn't get out of it. It was a town, it was in a prison of war camp inside. And when the worst, you know what the worst bombing we had? The Yankees used, the Americans used to come over during the day and bomb. But they used to bomb, you couldn't see them, they were that high. And the bombed our, the most damage was to the prisoner of war huts. At night time, at the same factory, the Wellingtons used to come over and drop flares, they were low down, and they used to pick the targets and hit the targets. The Americans, up out of the road of the gunfire, and they used to scatter them all over them, everybody got it. But the Wellingtons, great, they used to drop a flare and you could see they would light the place up and they was just slowly going along, they would pick the target and you could guarantee next day that it hit it.
Were any of your group killed or wounded by?
Yes, well, I was going to say there was one killed in this raid, and what the first one that was killed was this coloured one, this half coloured one I was telling, a South African, they called him, a typical name, Potgieter, called him. And he was killed, that was the first one. And I can't think of any other time, but it stuck in my mind, that one, because, you know, he was a decent chap as well. He was one of the very few, the South Africans that wouldn't cooperate, you know. And he was a Cape coloured, I think it would call them. He was in the South African army.
What was the discipline within your own unit, your own military discipline?
In the camp.
How did that function?
Well, we just had to work it out ourselves, you know. I mean, there was no leader or anything like that. There was no...
no one in charge, rank.
Mind you, there was an MO, you see. American officer and things like that. But for me, the only ones that ruled was the Germans, and we used to put up with... We were in bunks, mind you, bunks, and had an LG next to me, Blackie. He belonged where we'd been... come from Marath, he belonged to Alexandria, right up that way, you know. And he was, but apart from that, prisoner of war life itself in the hut, it was good. But the one, for instance, you could get a laugh at times, especially when you did get a parcel. There was a lad belonging Birmingham. He would give anything away for, he wouldn't pack in smoke, he'd give anything for a cigarette. And we called him, he used to get this tin mate called Cam at the time after the war. And he used to give his meat away for to get cigarettes. We called him Cam Orton. Oh, he used to keep the meat, that was it, and just eat as it was. But any other stuff, he'd give for cigarettes, you know.
Did the conditions under which you were living cause problems between you from time to time? Tempers fraying, this kind of thing?
Yes, I'll tell you what it did. Incidentally, now that you mention it, in the hut, we had a Cypriot Greek with us and this coloured one. And different ones, and there's a lot of race arguments came into that. You know, there's to me, I thought this, he was an Algerian. He's a bit of a troublemaker, but he wasn't really bad, but the Cypriot was always at his neck and that. But apart from that, they weren't too bad. I was trying to think of something else there.
Was any stealing going on from each other?
Well, you had to watch. You had to watch your hide and stuff, because some of them, big lads, the biggest ones used to go down first. If anyone went, it was the big ones. Likes of us, it didn't make a lot of difference to me, you see. But you would have to watch the likes of them, because, you know, they were going right down. Some gluttonous stuff down when, as they got it.
You mean they were losing weight?
Yeah. Oh, you lose it quicker than, you know, lose it. Really go down. And our different ones died, you know. I didn't really know them from my regiment, because they were all mixed up. But different ones, big fellas, died. You know, the big ones was going first. This little one, I was telling you, used to keep his sandwiches when we were at Leipzig, Germany. He used to keep a little bit of his sandwiches. He had stuff hidden all over the place, and he was getting the same rations as us. But he was only little, and he was skinny. He belonged around about Birmingham as well. But he could economise on it. I mean, I used to sometimes save a little sandwich and take it out, whereas on the morning, and we're on the road to work, I used to eat. It's supposed to be for me a little bit. I saved my dinner. He could save somebody who went back at night, I think.
Within your own group, was there any bullying that went on?
No, I don't think you could afford to, because we were down, you know, and all. But I think it was more pretty, you know, considering they were strangers to us, we were pretty well decent comradeship.
Did you have anyone who...
There was one that, this fellow this lad that died belonging here, Jack Milburn. I've always told people this, he used to keep the morale up something, you know, great. When we were walking from to work, some places we had a route march to work, you know, and I would be walking, Jack Milburn in front, and he used to turn around like that and laugh at you, and he used to say, "What the bloody hell has he got to laugh at?" But just to turn around, and everybody was quite happy, as much to say, "Well, if he's happy, I am." And he kept the morale up. And he's always getting his hair cut off.
Did you have anyone who tried to get on with the Germans? You mm-hmm. know,
there was some. There was creepers like that. You could tell there were, you know, they used to go along, talk, and then the next thing you knew, they would sit, or maybe give a cigarette to the... And, you know, they used to collaborate. And often you'll find a good speak German. The South Africans, you say, that, or Dutch or something like that. There was something like that, but it didn't bother you much, you know. They couldn't do much more to you than they were already doing. And...
Did you need to exert any form of your own discipline within your group against anyone who was acting in a bad way?
No.
Against the group?
I don't think we did, no. I think we really... At the job, the one we were longest at was the petrol factory. We were so sick when we got back, we were glad to get back home and just settle down.
Where was this petrol factory? You said it was in Czechoslovakia.
It was in Czechoslovakia. And a place called... Brooks, and I've never been able to find BRU with the umlauts on X. Now, I've never been able to find it on a modern map. I've looked for it, I can't find it. And there was Brooks, and the other place was Muchow. And now, to finish out, I've been wondering which was which, but I'm sure the Brooks one was Czechoslovakia, and Muchow was just outside Leipzig, I think it was.
Did you ever receive any visit from the Red Cross people checking?
No. Nothing like that, never. We got mind, we used to, at first we were getting partial, but when nearing the end of the war was the worst time, we were getting nothing because Jerry was strangled all these columns and everything, you know, they couldn't get the Red Cross partial through. But we used to get sometimes, one time, a British one, American one, or a Canadian one, and that was the one they used to, you know, to change the different stuff.
Which was the best?
The British one, but the American ones were, the Canadian ones were good as well. They were all good, but you used to get, I always remember, if you got a British one, that one could come from Hitchin, that one could come from York or somewhere like that, from different places. And there was one, I forget which one of them, the first one I got was the little tins of flaked egg or powdered egg. And surprisingly, you could have paid out of that. And, but in the Canadian ones, it was maple leaf, tins of margarine and things like that. And Klim, big tins of Klim. Well, that's reverse, that's milk. You know, Klim, powdered milk. We used to use that. Well, you could feed on that, you say, but it's a big tin it was with a top on. And Yorkshire pudding mixture, things like that.
Did you get one parcel each, or had you to share?
We got one parcel each, but we didn't get, we didn't get them very often.
But did you then exchange?
Yeah. And you used to exchange for what was wanted. So you'd find a lot of them would exchange for baccy, for cigarettes, you know. They would not starve themselves, but they would take something smaller for so you get some fags. And the cigarettes that they used to make cigarettes out of, some of them. I've seen some of these foreigners smoking the bark of a tree. You know, it's trying to. Here's another one. When I was in solitary once, this, I think it was Carl Morton, this one that do anything but cigarettes. He went in, he hadn't a cigarette. He was in and he had a cigarette. And this is what he reportedly did now, what I heard, just so he could get a smoke. He clipped his leather brush, clipped it up with his horse hair. He used to smoke tea leaves and all sorts. And he had some toilet paper, made a cigarette. He got some more toilet paper, and he had Mepo. Goodness knows how he had Mepo, or some sort of polish he'd get in it. And he'd wrapped a pencil in toilet paper, and the lead end of the pencil, and he'd touch it to the light bulb, and he got a light. So how he did that, but that was what was reported to me for the smoke. What good he got out of that, I don't know, but he used to smoke. You know, real smokers, they would smoke anything. The tea leaves used to save them up and just, put them on top of the fire, on top of the big stove, you know, the burner. And we used to make our tea, take the lid off the stove, and the hard tub biscuits, you used to get a tin of hard tub biscuits. It was a long, oblong one I got, take the lid off, eat the hard tub. We used to make the tea, it put a wire in the tub and put them down into the fire with the tea in until it boiled, then pull it up, and that's where you got your tea. And they would make all sorts of chairs and clocks and all sorts. Some of them used to make out of tins. Marvellous, I saw a fellow made it. He saved his tins up and he had the legs all tins together. And I forget how he had the top flat and he made a stool out of it. You know, that's what they do with. And they used to make these little machines. A Klim tin with a handle, like, and the fans inside. Make the fans, like, and the spindles right through. And a hole at that end. And used to, like a funnel fixed in at that end. Used to turn this fan, and any little bits of paper or wood used to light them. And that's how you can make a little fire. Just turn it like that, and just like an ember. Used to make an ember. In this particular camp we're in, where you weren't allowed fire on, you know, if there was any heat on. But they used to make these, what they call, a lot of prisoner wars, make these heating machines. And just like a blacksmith's fire at work, like at the finish, you know, they turn it round as quick as they could, and you used to blow and make a little heat, and you put on top, and they used to make your tea. But all sorts you could, there used to be all sorts of things they made.
Did you get mail through very often?
So I didn't get much then, not when I was pregnant. I told you that one time I got this, I believe it was when I was in the public house one. But apart from that, I got a lot of mail one time that had caught up to us. But that was, I think, was when I was in the army. And I got a load of mail, but it was all weeks and weeks old, you know. But then when, talking of the prisoners of war, they finished, they started to get nasty with us because they knew the end was coming, you know. And
you know from the bombing raids.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them, they've like deserted. I don't know whether they deserted or whether they moved out, because I came away about a couple of days before, and we'll start to walk towards our lines. And the Russians overtook us. The Russians were coming this way, and they overtook us before we got to the American lines. And it was really the Russians that had liberated us, but then we got the American lines. There was actually just a tape across the road. We just went underneath, and that was it.